Well, my guest today is Nick Gazzard. Nick, would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Nick Gazzard. I'm from the Holly Gazzard Trust. I founded the Trust back in 2014.
And most people, particularly locally, will have heard of the Holly Gazzard Trust. Would you like to tell us the history of it? And it's quite a painful history for you, I should think, isn't it?
Absolutely. The Trust was born out of the murder of Holly back in February 2014. Holly was a young, vivacious individual who really had a real zest for life. And unfortunately, she got him mixed up with the wrong boyfriend, someone that wouldn't take no for an answer. And the eventual outcome was that he murdered her in the salon where she worked in Gloucester. We felt very passionately that Holly should not just be another statistic, and that something positive should come out of her murder. So we set up the Holly Gazzard Trust with a number of aims to help local individuals.
And that was back in 2014?
It was, yes.
Yeah. And Holly, we should explain, is your daughter.
Holly's my daughter, yes. Yeah. She was 20 years of age when she was murdered.
Yeah. And it was quite a public murder, wasn't it? In the salon in the middle of Gloucester, was it?
It was. It was in the middle of Gloucester on a Tuesday sort of tea time when Holly was murdered. Oh. And it really was a very, very public affair in the sense that I think it shocked the whole of the surrounding area because it got such a huge media coverage, and it was something that I think Gloucester hadn't experienced before.
Well, that's right. I remember being shocked by it, you know, because it was so public, and because of the pictures and the people in there and everything. But apart from being obviously a very tragic event for you and your family, you decided to make it a positive one as well.
Absolutely. You know, we felt that Holly was too good just to be another statistic. So we set up the Holly Gazzard Trust, you know, really as a legacy for Holly. And the whole emphasis of the Trust is about helping people, particularly young people, because a lot of domestic abuse and stalking happens to young people. So we wanted to provide them with that support and look at gaps where services are not being provided within our county.
Specifically girls?
Not necessarily, no, across the whole spectrum, so boys and girls.
Yes, because boys get abused too.
Absolutely, yes, yes. Yeah. Whilst we always say it's girls, and 80% of it does happen to girls, yes, boys get abused as well, you know, whether that's in same-sex relationships or in a heterosexual relationship.
Is it more common than most people would think for young people to be abused like that?
It is. And I think one of the things that we want to do is to highlight that it is a common occurrence and that, you know, we've got to do a lot more to protect our young people. You know, and I always sort of refer back to the very fact that, you know, the county council do a survey of pupils in schools every year, and one of the things that always sticks in my mind is the fact that, you know, one of these surveys, it came out that 100 young boys and girls said that they were being abused on a daily basis.
That's in Gloucestershire?
That's in Gloucestershire, yes. Yeah. And 10% of the whole respondents said that they wanted more information about domestic abuse. You know, so that really does tell us that it is a big issue.
It has, in the past, been quite a secretive thing, hasn't it, that people didn't talk about it so much?
Absolutely. It's classified as a taboo subject for many people. Mm. And, you know, before Holly died, I didn't know much about domestic abuse or stalking. I know a hell of a lot more now. And one of the things that we want to try and do is to raise that awareness, bring it above the table, you know, something that people can talk about and feel more comfortable about talking. Mm. You know, a lot of people see if they're being abused as a shameful thing.
Yes.
And we're trying to change that attitude, say it's not a shameful thing. You know, we need to talk about it, and we need to get those people to the right areas to get the right help.
Of course, one of the other problems in the past was that the police wouldn't treat it was domestic abuse, it was domestic, and therefore not something that they would follow up.
Yes, unfortunately so. You know, as you know, too often you hear, well, that's just a domestic.
Mm.
But the damage that's being done is horrendous, and therefore we've got to try and change attitudes all the way through the criminal justice system.
Mm. Physical and psychological damage.
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of emphasis these days on the psychological damage. You know, we've got mental health, open minds, you know, and there are lots of stats that you can work with. You know, 25% of the workforce suffers mental health at any one time. Mm. You know, and domestic abuse and stalking is a big factor in a person's mental health. So it's not just the physical, it's the mental as well. You know, coercive control we classify it as, you know, which encompasses psychological sexual, financial, and emotional abuse. You know, so there's all those different types of abuse. And, you know, we're fortunate enough that, you know, in December 2015, the Serious Crime Act was amended to make coercive control a criminal offence. And that was the first time, really, we had an offence that made domestic abuse a criminal offence.
Now, you're talking about domestic abuse and stalking. There's obviously a line between those two, but they're related, is that right?
They are related, yes, and the behaviours are very, very, very similar. It's all to do with the intentions, whereas stalking is more about fixation and obsession. But when you look at the link between the two, 70% of those individuals that are stalked are either stalked by an ex-partner or a current partner. So there's a massive link between the two.
The current partner bit is quite difficult to come to terms with, isn't it? That you're actually in a partnership with somebody and yet you're stalking them to find out what they're doing. And
absolutely, yes. And it's not, in that basis, it's not an equal partnership because you have one person which is very, very dominant over the other and wants to know where that individual is all the time. So, yeah, it's very difficult, but it happens, and it happens a lot in relationships.
There was a storyline in The Archers, wasn't there, about coercive control?
There was.
And I think a lot of people, well, some people said, oh, it's overdone, it doesn't happen. And other people said, that's exactly what happened to me, and I understand exactly how it happened.
I think when you work in this field and you listen and you follow The Archer's story, you know, and that was built up over a period of over
a long
year.
Time, wasn't
yes,
it?
And this is what happens in a lot of these situations, not necessarily for that length of time, but it can happen a lot longer than that or a lot shorter. But it's something which does build up over a period of time. And, you know, a lot of people say it's absolutely what happened to me. And I know people that actually were advising The Archers from the professional agencies, and it is exactly what's happened. Yeah. So we had to get it absolutely, they had to get it absolutely right.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it opened a lot of people's eyes.
It did. And for something like The Archers to come forward with that as well, I think it actually tried to reach a group of people that perhaps were pretty closed in this subject before in terms of their thought process.
And the fact that it was happening not in the middle of a city, but in a rural area too, because that's another thing, isn't it? It's not just in cities.
It is. You know, one thing we always say to people is that domestic abuse and stalking is not selective. It doesn't matter whether you're rich, you're poor, you're black, you're white, you live in the Cotswolds or you live in the inner city Gloucester. It doesn't matter. It's not selective in that sense.
How does social media relate to this?
Well, social media opens up a whole new gambit because of the very fact that, you know, particularly from a stalking perspective, in stalking you used to have to be physically near someone to stalk them, either in the car outside or walking behind them in the street. But now you can stalk anybody anywhere in the world via mobile phones, by PCs, laptops. So it's opened up a whole new world. And also a lot more pressure on people as well when you look at social media, because you can't get away from things anymore because there's constant contact there. So it has added a whole new dimension to abuse and stalking.
There's a lot of evidence, isn't there, that social media is quite damaging to, I think, particularly young girls, but I think boys as well, because bullying on social media goes on quite a lot.
It does, absolutely, and it can be faceless as well, because you can set up fake accounts and you can bully someone. You know, when we didn't have social media, you could be bullied in the playground, but when you got home, shut the door, that was it. Now there's that constant contact, so it's put another dimension to the whole issue.
Well, having teenage granddaughters myself, I know how much time they spend on their phones.
Yeah, absolutely.
And most of the time you wouldn't know what they were doing.
No, that's correct. You know, and we do a lot of work with young people, particularly in schools, and a part of the Trust's aim is to help those individuals in terms of healthy relationships. So we fund a young person's coordinator at the local domestic abuse support service, who does work in schools, and a lot of workshops that she holds are centred around social media, and they use that as the medium because that's how young people communicate these days. So,
well, yes.
So if we use something which actually they are affiliated with and they can actually see, we can get them to realise that it can be a very dangerous thing.
I see that I'm reading about this, the Gloucestershire Domestic Abuse Support Services, and this support work is for children, for young people between the ages of 13 and 19.
Primarily, yes.
13 is quite young, isn't it?
Well, it is young, but actually we are doing some work in primary schools these days because we think 13 is too late.
It's too late.
It's too late because they've formed opinions by then, and we've got to get them a lot earlier to try and get them to understand, you know, what a healthy relationship is and how to actually respect an individual in a relationship. So we're actually going a lot younger than that these days.
So the aim is to educate youngsters about good relationships.
It is. It's to actually provide them with the information for them to be able to make informed decisions about those relationships. You know, those that are already in relationships to actually reflect on their own relationship, and if they believe that their relationship is one which is going down an unhealthy route, what they can do about it and how they can exit that relationship safely.
Mm-hmm.
And those that aren't in relationships, you know, what a healthy relationship looks like, what you should expect from a partner. You know, it's all about respect at the end of the day,
yeah.
In terms of
yeah.
both ways, in the sense of, you know, how you should treat each other respectfully.
I know there's been a lot of talk over the last few years in the press about boys' bad behaviour and boys not respecting girls at all and girls expecting to be treated like that. And it's quite difficult to get over that.
It is, and you know, I've attended some of these workshops in local schools here, and you know, where some young girls feel the boundary is far, far to the right, and we've got to bring it more back to the centre. You know, what they think, you know, boys should be able to do to them, whether it's to their phones, whether it's to them as individuals, actually is not correct.
It's not healthy.
It's very unhealthy, and I think we've got to swing that pendulum back a lot more to the centre.
Is this partly because they haven't got good role models?
I think it's a combination of issues, really. You know, there's so much media around now.
I was thinking of the media, not just personal role models.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you talk about, you know, even games. You talk about films. You talk about music as well, in terms of some of the music that's around and how that glamorizes abuse and glamorizes violence. You know, so there's all these issues that young people have to contend with, and that's where they get their influence from.
What's this program that they're running? Holly's Young People. This is what you're doing for these kids. What's this program called, Crush, Nick?
Yeah, Crush is a project under Holly's Young People's program. And basically what it is it's a project which was developed by West Mercia Women's Aid. And it basically takes young people between 13 and 19 who have either been abused or they have been traumatised by abuse within the family, might be mum and dad, and we take them down a 10-week programme to try and get them back on the straight and narrow, try and show them what good is, what respect is, because they've obviously got a different understanding of what it is. And those people are referred into us by the local authority or by pastoral care or by schools, and we run those programmes throughout the county. You know, currently there's one being run in the Forest of Dean.
Right. And this is a group of children, a group of young people who will spend 10 weeks in this programme.
It is. They once a week, for 10 weeks, we run a programme. It's an accredited programme by Worcester University, and it's been totally evaluated, so we know it has merit. And we're just really trying to bring them back into the centre to try and show them what actually good role models are and what healthy relationships are.
Have you got proof that it works?
We have. It's been evaluated. It's been run in other counties as well. So we know it absolutely works. And certainly the feedback that we get from those that have attended some of the previous courses is very, very positive.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's like sort of Alcoholics Anonymous or something. You've got to get people to see where they're going.
You have, absolutely, yes. And you've got to give them something to aim for as well, you know, something to latch onto, you know, to say, you know, this is how you should be behaving, or this is how someone should be behaving towards you, or that kind of relationship, what you're seeing is not right, and this is what is right.
Yeah, I think role models are important, and it must be very difficult for some children, you know, especially, as you said, if there's abuse in the family.
Absolutely, yes, that's right.
Because it doesn't just affect the person who's being abused, it affects everybody else as well.
It does, and even if you're not physically in the same room where the abuse is taking place, and they know that young people in particular are affected by just by hearing abuse, not necessarily seeing it as well in the family.
And seeing the effect. I mean, if mum is terrified of dad all the time,
absolutely.
They're going to know it, aren't they?
Absolutely right, yeah, absolutely.
Another thing from your website, which I picked up here, is something called Peace Peddlers.
Yes. And
this is not something that you do, is it?
No, it's not. No, no. One of the things that we wanted to do as a result of Holly being killed, you know, she was stabbed to death, and, you know, knife culture and knife crime within our cities and counties is an issue. It's not a massive issue, but it is an issue.
It's increasing too.
It is increasing, and it's so easy to get hold of a knife these days, and it's so easy to actually do a lot of damage. So one of the things that we wanted to do was support the peace peddlers, who basically are an outreach group of people who go to certain parts of the cities where kids hang around on street corners, and try and really deal with them in terms of, you know, if they're carrying knives or if they're antisocial behaviour, and try and deal with them in the most positive way. You know, act as real role models for these kids as well.
And they're going out to where the kids are rather than the kids to come to them.
Yeah, because these types of individuals who perhaps are more complex won't come into the youth clubs and in the areas whereby a lot of this teaching is done. So it's actually an outreach. We go out and we deal with those individuals.
And that helps?
It does, yes. We've had some successes on that front. And we work closely. They work closely with the police as well, obviously.
Yes.
But it's really that one step removed from the police.
Hmm.
Because, you know, you don't want the police going to all of these different areas. You know, they've got limited resource anyway. But actually, it should be a community that should be dealing with our own people.
And if it's people who are more nearer to the age of the children, they're more likely to relate to them.
Yeah, and I think people do relate to those individuals. You know, youngsters, they're looking for role models sometimes, and you know, if you get youth workers who are perhaps well known in those areas talking to those individuals, they actually respect those individuals more than if a policeman would come along.
Is this mostly within the city?
It is, yes. Yeah, it's primarily city based.
I think that children in rural areas perhaps don't congregate in quite such large numbers. It's not so easy to do.
It's not, no.
Although, having said that, I mean, there are half a dozen places in Winchcombe where I know that young kids do congregate, and we have had a couple of examples over the years of knife crime in Winchcombe. I mean, it's not such a... Well, we're back to the Archers again. It's not such a cosy rural community as you might think.
Absolutely, yes. And I think we need to be aware of that fact that, you know, it can happen anywhere.
Mm. Let's go back to basics. You decided to set up the Holly Gazzard Trust. Tell us about the trust itself and what exactly it does. I mean, one of your aims is to sponsor a scholarship for a young hairdresser, isn't it?
It is. And if you go back to the beginning, you know, when I set up the trust, I really wanted it to reflect what Holly was and what Holly went through. And therefore, we've got three real aims. And the first of those aims is to deal with the knife crime, which we've already talked about, because that's how Holly's life was ended. The second one is to deal with the amount of abuse and stalking that Holly was subjected to. So we're rolling out some programmes there. But the third element is, you know, Holly was a very talented hairdresser and beautician. And she was lucky enough that she had a supportive family to be able to take that forward and have the support from us to be able to do that career.
And she was starting on what was going to be a successful career.
She was, absolutely, yes. And, you know, there are lots of talented young individuals around our county who perhaps don't have that opportunity because, you know, financially they may not be able to afford it, or they may be in a situation where they've got to pay, they may have a child, they've got creche costs, you know, all these types of things which are barriers that are put in their way. So one of the things that we wanted to do was to sponsor and put forward some scholarships for these young people so that they could actually fulfil their careers in hairdressing. And we partnership there with Gloucestershire College, and we've currently, I think, got four young individuals going through the courses there.
And this is financially supported?
It's financially supporting, yes.
By the trust?
By the trust, yes. Yeah. And you know, that can be anything from their clothing, their equipment, their transport. I think one person were funding her childcare costs. I think there's actually one person that might come from around this area, around Winchcombe, maybe a bit further afield. So we do fund a lot of their costs, which they wouldn't be able to get back normally.
And how do you find these young people?
They would apply to Gloucester College to undertake the courses there.
Right.
And then they would fill out an application form for funding from the trust.
So funding their education, specifically in hairdressing, would you say that was originally was the major aim?
It was originally, yes, absolutely, because, you know, we knew how difficult it was for Holly to get on the course and to finish the courses that she went on, and how it's more expensive it is as well. So, you know, we just wanted to give individuals a chance in life. And, you know, our mantra is all about hope, passion, and a life fulfilled. Unfortunately, Holly's life wasn't fulfilled, but, you know, that doesn't mean to say that we can't help others fulfill their lives.
I think that's it's a very good aim. And, you know, under the circumstances, it's a very generous aim, mm-hmm. I think. But then you didn't stop there. You started looking at the domestic abuse side of it.
Yes. The more and more I read, more and more I got involved with domestic abuse services, the more I felt the need that there were lots of gaps within the services that were being provided that actually we as a trust could fulfil. So, first of all, we funded a young person's coordinator at GDAS, whose primary role was to go into schools to help raise the awareness of domestic abuse and healthy relationships. And the second part of it is around the stalking element. You know, we've just launched this year a stalking support service for Gloucestershire, which is one of the only ones in the country. You know, I did a lot of research right. in Hampshire around a best practice model of a stalking clinic. Came back, built a strategy, put that strategy to the local constabulary to say, look, this is how we should be handling stalking within our county, both from the police aspect and from the support service surrounding that. They absolutely agreed, and we've set up the service now, and we're just going through the training process. So right. that involves a stalking clinic within the police, which will deal with high risk cases after they've been filtered out. But we will fund an independent stalking advocacy caseworker who will deal with victims of stalking within the county.
Right. Of course, the one thing that's got to happen before any of that is that these people who are suffering from stalkers have got to be found and identified.
Absolutely. One of the things that we know is stalking, reporting of stalking is very much underreported and underrepresented. You know, we know that I think in the last 12-month rolling period, there were only 50 cases reported, where it should be 100 times that. We know that right. from the stats. So we have a big awareness program that we need to start to roll out to get both the public to understand what stalking is and what they can do about it, but also the professionals who work in this arena, you know, get them to understand what stalking is so that they can actually start to refer people into the stalking support service.
Right, and be aware that it's happening.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. Because at the moment there's not a lot of awareness around.
No, I can understand that. And I can understand too that if you are being stalked, it's probably quite difficult to admit it.
I think it's quite difficult at the moment to identify with it and to admit that you are being stalked. You know, statistics tell us that a person endures 100 stalking events before they come forward.
Yeah.
So it's huge in terms of its non-awareness.
You were mentioning to me earlier on too an app for mobile phone, which is something that you've been developing or encouraging.
Yes, we have something called HollyGuard, which is a personal safety app which can be downloaded to any smartphone which has been manufactured since 2010. And basically what it does is it makes your smartphone into a personal safety device. So if you download the app, you create an account, and the two important factors there are an email address and a telephone number.
Someone else's,
yeah. And those are the individuals that you would want an alert to go to if you were in trouble.
Right.
So it may be a parent, it may be a friend, you know, maybe a colleague at work. And the way the app works is that if you were leaving, let's say, a building late at night, all you do is you activate the app by tapping it, and that will start to track you then, GPS in the background. Right. And if you felt uncomfortable or got into trouble, then all you need to do is to shake your phone. And by shaking the phone, that will activate the alert.
Right.
And the individual then whose telephone number and email address you've already put into your phone would receive that alert, and they would have a message saying that you might be in trouble. At the same time as they receive that message, your phone will actually start to record both voice and video. So if there was someone untowards maybe attacking you or you're uncomfortable, you could start to film it. And that filming is not kept on your phone. It's actually streamed back to our secure service.
Right.
So we hold the information. Even if the phone was damaged or stolen, we've still got some of the evidence. If you get in trouble again, you can shake your phone again and it starts to strobe light and send out that Pearson sort of rape sound alarm.
Yeah.
And that's really to attract maximum attention if you really are in
trouble.
And
maybe to put off the person.
Absolutely, and to put off the individual, because it is going to be making a huge racket.
It's very unpleasant.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
And you're the only person then that actually can deactivate that by putting in a code.
Right. So he can't just grab it and run and stop it.
You've got to know the code. Yeah, you've got to know the code. Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it was fortuitous for us. It was my other daughter who met the chief executive of Panic Guard in London, who developed the app, and you know, conversations went on, and as a result of that, we've now got HollyGuard. So,
and this is free.
It is free to download and free to use. Yes,
well, that's brilliant.
A lot of people say, well, "Why didn't you sell it? Why didn't you?" Well, our whole ethos really is to help young people.
Yeah,
and young people don't.
And
have
if
a lot
you
cash.
Sold it, they wouldn't buy
they
it.
Wouldn't buy it, and some people would buy it, but actually, we want everyone to have it. You know, you know, HollyGuard. The beauty about HollyGuard is it's very simple to use. It works throughout the world, so wherever you are in the world, it's multi-language. We have people use it in Canada, in France, in Germany, in Holland. And it's got lots of different languages so that even if you're in this country and you're Polish or you're Eastern European or French, you know, you can actually have the app in that language.
I was just thinking, you know, we've been talking about young people, but there have been quite a few cases of little old ladies being mugged in the street and that sort of thing would be ideal, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, you know.
Perhaps I shall put it on my phone.
I've got it on my phone, and as you know, I'm not a young person, but one of the things that I always remember is that one gentleman came forward to us and said, I can't use your app, it doesn't work for me. And we said, why? He said, well, because when I try to register it, it won't accept my date of birth. And we said, okay, let's have a look at it. And when we went through, I think he was 80 years of age, and it didn't go back that far.
Right.
So we had to change the app to make sure that we even put even further back into the the 20th century, so that these people can register the account. So no, absolutely everyone. It's not for domestic abuse people. It's not for stalking people. It's for absolutely everyone. It's
and tell
a
me
safety
again
device.
how you would get that. Luke?
You can get it through our website www.hollyguard.org, or it's got its own website where you can download a user guide, which is www.hollyguard.com.
And it's Holly with an IE, isn't it?
Holly with an IE, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating, and I hope that that's taken up by lots of people, because I can imagine people finding that quite useful. I shall recommend it to my teenage granddaughters.
Yeah,
and maybe I'll download it myself as well.
Yeah. We have to over 12,000 people using it at the moment, so
that's pretty good, isn't it? Nick, how is all this funded?
All of our funding comes from the general public, so we run three or four events each year, whereby we raise money. But also a lot of people raise money for us by holding their own events. You know, and we try to get to as many of those events as we can. So, you know, all the money that we receive in comes from the general public.
And you get well funded.
We do, although we need more funding because we're opening up more services. You know,
And these services don't come cheap.
Well, you talk the stalking service, you know, just by employing an independent stalking advocacy caseworker costs us over £40,000. So it isn't cheap, and we've got to raise even more funds this year to be able to do that.
Have you got events coming up?
We have a golf day in a few weeks' time, yes. We've got a summer holiday in July around Holly's birthday, and then we have a dinner at the end of the year, which is held at Hadley Manor.
And these are all on your website?
They're on the website, yes.
So if people were interested in those, or were interested in, say, running a coffee morning or something, the information would all be on your website?
It's on the website, and we've even got a fundraising pack that people can download.
Right.
Which will give them some indication as to how to raise funds.
Just give
us
that website again, Nick, just to be sure.
www.hollygazard.org, and that's Holly with an IE.
And Gazard with two Zs.
Two Zs, yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that, Nick. I'm sure a lot of people will find that interesting.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.